Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We're up to Book 7, Chapter 12. When they all drove back from Pelageya Danilovna's, Natasha, who always saw and noticed everything, arranged that she and Madame Schoss should go back in the sledge with Dimla, and Sonya with Nicholas and the maids. On the way back, Nicholas drove at a steady pace instead of racing and kept peering by that fantastic all-transforming light into Sonya's face and searching beneath the eyebrows and moustache for his former and his present Sonya, from whom he had resolved never to be parted again. He looked, and recognizing in her both the old and the new Sonya, and being reminded by the smell of burnt cork of the sensation of her kiss, inhaled the frosty air with a full breast and, looking at the ground flying beneath him and at the sparkling sky, felt himself again in fairyland. "Sonya, is it well with thee?" he asked from time to time. "Yes," she replied, "and with thee?" When halfway home, Nicholas handed the reins to the coachman and ran, for a moment, to Natasha's sledge, and stood on its wing. "Natasha," he whispered in French, "do you know I have made up my mind about Sonya?" "Have you told her?" asked Natasha, suddenly beaming all over with joy. "Oh, how strange you are with that moustache and those eyebrows! Natasha, are you glad?" "I am so glad, so glad. I was beginning to be vexed with you. I did not tell you, but you have been treating her badly." "What a heart she has, Nicholas. I am horrid sometimes, but I was ashamed to be happy while Sonya was not," continued Natasha. "Now I am so glad. Well, run back to her." "No, wait a bit. Oh, how funny you look," cried Nicholas, peering into her face and finding in his sister, too, something new, unusual, and bewitchingly tender that he had not seen in her before. "Natasha, it's magical, isn't it?" "Yes," she replied, "you have done splendidly." "Had I seen her before as she is now," thought Nicholas, "I should long ago have asked her what to do, and have done whatever she told me, and all would have been well." "So you are glad, and I have done right?" "Oh, quite right. I had a quarrel with Mama some time ago about it. Mama said she was angling for you." "How could she say such a thing? I nearly stormed at Mama. I will never let anyone say anything bad of Sonya, for there is nothing but good in her." "Then it's all right," said Nicholas, again scrutinizing the expression on his sister's face to see if she was in earnest. Then he jumped down, his boots scrunching the snow, ran back to his sledge. The same happy, smiling Circassian with moustache and beaming eyes looked up from under a sable hood, was still sitting there, and that Circassian was Sonya, and that Sonya was certainly his future happy and loving wife. When they reached home and had told their mother how they had spent the evening at the Malyukovs, the girls went to their bedroom. When they had undressed, but without washing off the cork moustaches, they sat a long time talking of their happiness. They talked of how they would live when they were married, how their husbands would be friends, and how happy they would be. On Natasha's table stood two looking glasses which Dunyusha had prepared beforehand. "Only when will all that be? I'm afraid never. It will never be too good," said Natasha, rising and going to the looking glasses. "Sit down, Natasha, perhaps you'll see him," said Sonya. Natasha lit the candles, one on each side of one of the looking-glasses, and sat down. "I see someone with a moustache," said Natasha, seeing her own face. "You mustn't laugh, miss," said Danusha. With Sonya's help and the maid's, Natasha got the glass she held into the right position opposite the other. Her face assumed a serious expression, and she sat silent. She sat a long time looking at the receding line of candles reflected in the glasses and expected, from tales she had heard, to see a coffin, or him, Prince Andrew, in that last dim, indistinctly outlined square. but ready as she was to take the smallest speck of the image of a man or of a coffin, she saw nothing. She began blinking rapidly and moved away from the looking glasses. "Why is it others see things and I don't?" she said. "You sit down, Sonya. You absolutely must tonight. Do it for me. Today I feel so frightened." Sonya sat down before the glasses, got the right position and began looking. "Now Miss Sonya is sure to see something," whispered Danusha. "Well, you do nothing but laugh." Sonya heard this and Natasha whisper. "I know she will. She saw something last year." For about 3 minutes all were silent. "Of course she will," whispered Natasha, but did not finish. Suddenly, Sonya pushed away the glass she was holding and covered her eyes with her hand. "Oh, Natasha," she cried. "Did you see? Did you? What was it?" exclaimed Natasha, holding up the looking glass. Sonya had not seen anything. She was just wanting to blink and to get up when she heard Natasha say, "Of course you will." She did not wish to disappear either, Danusha or Natasha, but it was hard to sit still. She did not herself know how or why the exclamation escaped her when she covered her eyes. "You saw him?" urged Natasha, seizing her hand. "Yes, wait a bit, I saw him," Sonya could not help saying, not yet knowing whom Natasha meant by him, Nicholas or Prince Andrew. "But why shouldn't I say I saw something? Others do see. Besides, who can tell whether I saw anything or not?" flashed through Sonya's mind. "Yes, I saw him," she said. "How? Standing or lying?" "No, I saw, at first there was nothing, and then I saw him lying down." "Andrew lying? Is he ill?" asked Natasha, her frightened eyes fixed on her friend. "No, on the contrary, his face was cheerful and he turned to me." And when saying this, she herself fancied she had really seen what she described. "Well, and then, Sonya?" "Well, after that I could not make out what there was, something blue and red." "Sonya, when will he come back? When shall I see him? Oh God, how afraid I am for him, and for myself, and about everything," Natasha began. And without replying to Sonya's words of comfort, she got into bed, and long after her candle was out, lay open-eyed and motionless, gazing at the moonlight through the frosty window panes. All right, there we have it, another chapter down. And I feel like Natasha is suffering from an anxiety disorder. She's so anxious to see her Prince Andrei. It seems like at every opportunity, she just explodes with questions. When will I see him? Did you see him in the looking glasses? This and that. Reddit user Garrock said, "This chapter closes with Sonya and Natasha playing a game in which they use two mirrors that reflect each other, supposedly to allow one to see omens or portents. Sonya sees nothing but lies and says she sees Andrei lying down with a cheerful face. Natasha doesn't take this omen well. Do you think there is an element of foreshadowing here? And do you feel the pall of doom always lays over the relationship between Andrei and Natasha?" JMama8779 said, "I'm not sure if it's the pessimist in me, but Nicholas seems to have his shit together at this point, and he is holding the family together in a big way. He wants to retire the military and return to Sonya, and I really hope he doesn't die." Eesh. Wiggity Whack responded saying, "I wish I could believe that he will come back and handle the family finances, but although he's matured a bit, he hasn't shown any sort of interest in that arena. He doesn't seem to be at all financially competent, and if his mother's only solution was for him to marry rich, they might be doomed. I think there's no financial benefit in marrying Sonya." And it is kind of down to him to save the family financially through marriage, or but maybe through his career, but I don't think that that's really realistic. DeFleury said, "The girls are talking happily about their husbands being BFFs, and I'm thinking, I thought the same thing. I can't imagine Prince Andrei and Prince Nicholas really getting along and being BFFs at all. Garrock actually asked the question as well. Nicholas briefly discusses with Natasha the quarrel he had with their mother. Now that he has all but engaged himself to Sonya, do you think the Rostov fortunes are doomed? Do you see a way out for the family financially? And do you think Nikolai is being immature with this decision and not considerate of his family's future? Well, I think those certainly are all the right questions. Sonya is very loyal to Nikolai, and now he does genuinely seem to be in love with her, so that's nice, that's good. He's had a big, long think about this proposal. He's been living with the potentiality of marrying Sonya for how long now? I don't know, a long time. The whole book, 10 years or something like that, whatever it spans thus far. So you can't exactly say he's rushing into it. And we know Sonya's very loyal and very in love with Nikolai, so as far as happy marriages go, it might be the way to go. But, you know, they are cousins, which isn't great, and it would be financial ruin for the Rostovs, so that also isn't great. So, I don't know. We've got a comment from a new contributor to the subreddit. Their name's Too Close to the Sea. Welcome to the podcast, Too Close to the Sea. They said, I've been reading along the whole year but haven't commented, but we're fast approaching the section of the book covered in the musical Natasha, Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812, which I'm incredibly excited about as it's what led me to read the book in the first place. I'm wondering if anyone would be interested in reading a little song chapter write-up as we read through that section. That sounds like a really cool thing. So, I didn't really know what this play was, but I think it's a musical, sorry, not a play, based on the upcoming section of the book. And it seems from this comment that there might be like a song that matches with each chapter in this section, is what I'm gathering. So, that could be a really cool thing to have a look at over the next few chapters. It's also exciting because it seems that section of the book that's upcoming was special enough to at least somebody to make a musical out of just that section. So I think it might be a really nice bit of the book. Also, the fact that it's called Natasha and Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812 I kind of wanted Natasha and Pierre to end up together. And that kind of gives me this one last bit of hope that, hey, maybe that's what's going to happen. All right, that's going to do us for today's episode. Thanks very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.